Before we do that, Michael made a proposal that the scrutiny committee makes a representation about the situation regarding testing. Now, before we go ahead with that, I think it's important to ask maybe Simon, is that helpful, Simon? Because there's no point in doing it if it's not helpful. If it is helpful, then there's every point in doing it.
So from my perspective, nationally, I'm fully aware of the issues that we're dealing with. They're fully aware of the challenges, and they are doing what they can. We've put a lot of pressure on them from South East, as John said, the 23 upper tier local authorities in South East of Britain. So we've done an awful lot of work to do that. Another letter, I'm not sure if that will help. But obviously that's really right to do.
Well, let's not miss the opportunity. Let's then, if Michael's in agreement, make a proposal that the committee supports the campaign for better testing, and we're prepared to send a letter if and when needed, and then we park it until it's needed. So is that your proposal, Michael?
Yeah, that's my proposal.
Right, can we have a seconder, George?
Yeah, good.
So, Megan, do you want to do the rounds then?
Yep, Councillor Cameron.
George, do you agree? Yeah, of course he does.
He's nodding. Yeah. Councillor Garrett. Yeah. Councillor Howe.
Agreed.
Councillor Lilly.
Michael?
Oh, sorry.
Four. So that's unanimous. So we voted to support. So we'll park that when it's needed. So now we've got a question from a comment from Alison, and a question from Joanna, and then Claire wants to make. So we're firmly going into item B. So let's take it in turn. So Alison.
Thank you, Chairman. I just wanted to add to Simon's comments about the support that's gone into care homes. There has been an integrated response to support care homes, both from our primary care colleagues who have aligned themselves, one GP per care home, who have regular contact on a weekly basis to help not just with COVID issues, but some of the ongoing health issues that some of our residents will be facing. But in addition to that, I'm very well aware of the support that's gone in terms of training and access to infection prevention control, to PPE, and to also medicines as needed, alongside the work that's happened through the discharge guidance of now testing every patient before they leave the hospital, and or if they require respite care, and using a care home to try and minimise the risk of COVID. And each of the care homes I'm aware of, because we're part of a joint group that review this, are taking actions to minimise the risk on a regular basis, either with their workforce, as testing, as Simon has said, but also in terms of not sharing their staff in the same way that they were before. And we have seen some incredible stories of, I don't know if you recall earlier in the pandemic, of people staying overnight in tents in gardens of care homes to help support their care home. There's been a huge response to try and keep them safe. And we're working together with all the community services, with social care, the trust community services, primary care, pharmacists, obviously the voluntary sector, all of the quality bodies that you would expect from infection prevention control to safeguarding, and just general help and advice. I'd also like to share that during the first stages, when some of the staff who were shielding or affected with COVID really affected the workforce that was available to care homes, the Trust actually offered staff up and who went in and supported those care homes actively with nurses, people to help support those residents in the care homes. So I think there's been a huge response to keep our care homes safe. And obviously we can't relax, we cannot become complacent, and that work continues. And we will continue to respond in the same way as a joint system to help ensure that those people who work and live in care homes is protected to the best of our ability.
So thank you for that reassurance, Alison. It was one of the questions that we posed in writing, and it was responded to very fully, and Kirk has just endorsed that. Now, before Joanne, before we allow you your question, I'm going to ask Claire if she wants to make her comment, just in case she answers it before you ask it. Claire, where are you?
I'm here, sat in my office at home. I didn't think I'd ever get so used to my own utility room, but, you know, hey-ho, the world we live in now. In answer to John's question, really, I think we need to be really careful that we don't label what happened nationally to what happened on the island-wide. You know, I think, you know, those that work within the system have found that they stepped up to proper collaborative, integrated working, you know, and my thanks go out to the CCG, adult, everyone who works within adult social care. Our performance, I think, was absolutely amazing. And I can say as a person of experience of that, because my daughter actually works in a care home, you know, and every week she is tested, you know, she works with people with dementia, she knows how difficult that is to actually test people in that situation. I read all the data that comes out every week. I read all the data that comes in the round-robin phone calls that go to all the care homes. And I think our performance in the island within adult social care and the whole system has been second to none.
Thank you, Claire. So, Joanna, your question, or has it been
Thanks,
answered?
John. No.
Right, good.
So I kind of just wanted to reiterate some of what Alison said about the sacrifice that care home managers and staff have made. It's absolutely incredible. They are still under a huge amount of pressure, even now, all these months later, and they face a pretty dark winter trying to protect their residents. I've spoken to some care home managers and staff that have not accessed public transport, they've not seen their own family, they've foregone holidays purely to protect their residents, and they're prepared to keep doing that. And to do that for so long is absolutely incredible. But I just wondered, we're also aware that every care home has taken a different approach. The government guidance has been prolific and extensive, has changed frequently, and we know that some care homes kind of locked down pretty early on, but other care homes didn't. And I just wondered whether there's any analysis done of the different approaches that care homes have taken, and whether that's contributed to their homes remaining COVID-free. I mean, I appreciate that some of it's down to luck, but I just wondered what learning we could get from the different approaches taken by the different care homes.
Right. Mark, who's responding to that?
Okay. I'll come in before Mark, if that's all right. I'll pay the cabinet members' prerogative. So I've seen every single week all the data, as I said, and it's quite clear, you know, when you look at the data, where the cases were and where they weren't. I think we have to remember we are not at the end of a pandemic. We are in the middle of this. And I think, yes, there will be lessons to be learned, but there's no real point in starting analysing data when you're in the middle of something. You really need to do that at the end. I think the support that adult social care is giving to those staff and that data that comes out is really important. So if they see that a care home is struggling, they are sending the support in and the training, as Alison said, to actually help them. But analysing that data now and then generally circulating that is not going to be helpful. I think what's important is the staff within adult social care and CCG are aware of what's going on and are putting in exactly the right support at the right time to help registered managers who might be struggling, and even to have a sort of a buddy system with other care homes who are doing really well. So that support is there and it is knowledge, but I don't think it needs to be, that data to go out wider. I know Andrew Garrett would like the data to come out now, but I think it just needs to be waiting till we're towards the end of this to share that. The most important thing is we are doing things the right way and supporting everybody within the whole independent care home system. Sorry, Mark. Thank you, Claire.
So I've got John and Andrew with their hands up, but we're in danger of asking questions before we've heard the verbal update. So I think we'll go ahead now with the verbal updates, which I guess is you, Mark, on items 1 and 2, please. If you could
thank
bring
you.
Us up
thank
to date with what hasn't already been covered.
There is a presentation, so I'm hoping someone will be able to put the presentation up.
Yeah, Sarah will be doing that. Yeah.
Did you?
It was submitted.
Yes, I've got it ready to show when you want to show it, but I'm going
so
to try anyway.
So you can put that presentation up. That will provide the necessary information for
right, just bear with me one
members
second.
Also those in attendance this afternoon.
Right. Should be able to see that on your screens now. Could you just tell me when you want me to move along?
I will do, of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. So, if I begin, John, with, I suppose, the context of adult social care in terms of, I suppose, the financial picture. So, prior to the onset of COVID-19, the following calculations were made in terms of level of funding required for adult social care. So it places it on a much more sustainable footing. There's much discussion already had about sustainability, pulling resources together, working collaboratively, which is key. So the House of Lords advocates $8 billion per annum to restore care quality and access levels to 2009-10 levels, addressed increased pressures, and also support unpaid carers and the level of unmet need that we face across our communities. The Health Foundation estimates that to meet the expected growth in demand from an ageing population, and we're very familiar with that in terms of the island, in terms of the ageing population, and the increased pay would cost around about $6 billion by 2023-24. That context, moving into a pandemic, adult social care was already under-resourced to deal with the COVID-19 pandemic by failure of successive governments of all political colours to recognise and understand how important it is to people and carers who need it, and 1.4 million people who work in it in terms of adult social care, by the failure to put social care on a sustainable and enduring footing, which is fundamental looking ahead, looking at the horizon in terms of the challenge we face, and in the context of COVID-19, of which we're in the middle. So post-COVID-19, the context of a highly probable, long, deep recession, I've already mentioned about research, about looking at what lessons to be learned, but we are still in the middle of something that looks like it's going to continue for some time. But adult social care, in terms of the Isle of Wight, is a major contributor to the economy and needs to be factored into regeneration plans going forward. Now, the next slide, please. So the government published, in response to COVID and adult social care, this whistle-stop tour that, to give you a flavour, the government published the D2A requirements, the discharge to assess requirements on the 19th of March, which included the requirement to discharge all people from hospital within 3 hours of being declared medically fit for discharge. And as part of those requirements, government allocated in total $1.3 billion to CCGs who became financially responsible for funding up to 12 weeks, with which we've operated on the island, people needing care and support not already funded by adult social care to leave hospital and avoid hospital admission. Governors recently updated this guidance, and CCGs will continue to be responsible for funding care for up to 6 weeks as we go through this phase of the pandemic. On April the 15th, government published the Adult Social Care Action Plan, and that included the need for all people being discharged from hospital to care homes to be tested for COVID, and councils had to develop and submit a care home support plan. We've mentioned about the care homes and the need to both collaborate but also engage with them, which we have done with all our partners on the island in terms of the response that we have been providing, and we've done today and we'll do tomorrow and we'll continue to do. But the government placed that responsibility and framed it within that support plan. An adult social care task force was established on the 9th of June, and its final report will be published in September, but there currently is no firm date for that as of yet. We've been notified that adult social care will need to develop a winter plan as we go into, and we've already mentioned this today, into winter planning and also managing with this, you know, this pandemic, to be submitted to DHSC by mid-October. We expect to receive guidance imminently, and we understand the government is also considering an additional round of infection control fund, which I'll touch on shortly, but this is to be formalised. And finally, we've been notified that we'll have to complete self-assessment about risk facing local care providers, picking up on the point already raised around needing to understand the real challenges for our provider services across the island, and then the mitigating actions that we'll take against those risks collaboratively. Now for the next slide, please. So the focus on care providers, the response of adult social care providers, social workers, commissioners, has been magnificent, as has been the NHS and the people who work in it. And I've noted the commentary in terms of from both Alison, also Maggie Oldham, and colleagues from health, but also was really warmed by the conversation we've had in terms of the voluntary sector and their input, which again was magnificent in the way of the speed at which we pulled things together to deliver for people on this island, particularly family carers. So particularly, as already mentioned, keeping shielding and keeping people safe. It was just natural that people pulled together on the island in different communities. And I know the different cells that were set up, particularly with the voluntary sector, was most welcomed. And many volunteers that we also saw within the service, but also within some of our homes, council-run homes like Adelaide and Goldings, where we had volunteers supporting the staff that were in those homes. And certainly on my visits there, some of the work that you could see and the care, attention to detail that staff were providing, again, was at the top level. A key lesson is that a pandemic response that focuses on emptying hospital beds, which we fully understand, without considering the impact on social care, did have huge consequences. Not starting testing of people entering care homes from hospital until the 15th of April, which we are fully aware of, social care was initially an afterthought. Next slide, please. So, CQ registered social care provision on the Isle of Wight. Just to give you a flavour in terms of the numbers, home care providers enabling 1,220 people to live well in the community on this island, and they employ 1,082 care staff. Residential care providers enabling 1,190 people to live well in residential care, employing 1,496 care staff, and employing 403 ancillary staff. Nursing homes enabling 451 people to live well in nursing care, 411 care staff, 71 nurses, and 174 ancillary staff. In addition to that is the work that's been developed within the commissioning side of the service managed by Laura, has been the creation of what we call personal assistance and a PA hub of 288 staff that are going out supporting people on their terms, working with them to enable them to live independently within the community on the island. Next slide, please. So we've mentioned this, we've touched on this in terms of supporting the care providers. Personal protective equipment, care providers have experienced very significant pressure, especially in securing masks and face coverings. Gloves and aprons are usual PPE uniform in adult social care. Providers have also faced hyperinflation costs for PPE. The council has made available approximately 200,000 items of PPE to providers whose own stocks have become dangerously low, and this has been free to our care providers. Financial support. The council has the £9 million received from government to help people's cost of COVID-19 in adult social care. And this enabled us to temporarily uplift care fees paid to providers by 10% from the 16th of March for 12 weeks at a total cost of around £898,485. In addition, we'd received 2.58 million in the form of infection control fund, and we'll expand on that in a moment, in order to further support care providers. Government provided strict criteria as how councils should allocate this money, and we have had to submit verification of our allocation to MHCLG and DHC, Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, etc. Next slide, please. So, in terms of the Infection Control Fund, I think it's clearly lodged out. I won't go right through the detail, but essentially 75% of the fund had to be allocated straight to care homes on a per bed basis. So we had 1,919 paid to providers in instalments the 1st of June 2020 and again on the 5th of August 2020. And 25% of the fund used to support other COVID-19 infection control measures as specified there in terms of home care providers, supportive living services, community service provision, day services, and contingency where further care home support is actually required, and the breakdown in terms of the description there. So we were allocating the resources to strengthen support our providers in terms of infection control. And I know Simon was on earlier on, but would absolutely understand the importance of ensuring that those providing care as well as receiving it are safe and protected from infection. Next slide, please. The Isle of Wight Council Emergency PPE Service, since the 9th of September, the number of individual providers supported, we've mentioned PA and home care, 63, residential and nursing homes, 56. And it totals out their breakdown of the sort of PPE equipment that we were supplying to those providers, and will know and be familiar with safety glasses, safety visors, sanitizers and aprons, etc. But the total number of items provided in both settings was 354,535. And the total number of individual requests from both settings was around about 302. But we have a very connected and close relationship with our providers and partners, and work very collaboratively in terms of how we both delivered and monitored the use of that equipment in terms of the best interests of the people on this island who are vulnerable and needing our assistance. Next slide, please. So the care homes with PPE status, amber, no one got the status of red through the duration, and during this period only 10% of care homes reported as being amber. Generally, PPE equipment was balanced in terms of the key items, aprons, eyewear, gloves, masks and sanitizers, as demonstrated there. Some variability, but nobody getting to a zero stock according to our monitoring of that delivery. Next slide, please. So care home vacancies, this is interesting in terms of the numbers of vacancy levels, both in residential homes and nursing homes. We saw a drop in terms of nursing homes and an increase in terms of our residential sector. And again, when we go forward, and we've already mentioned this about lessons learned, research, what does this tell us in terms of the impact for those living in residential care and sadly passing away within residential and nursing care? It starts to paint that picture. Next slide, please. People supporting care homes in the community diagnosed with COVID-19. Again, a lot of this in single figures or zeros. In terms of cared for in the community, very few. In care homes, initially numbers high, but again, coming right down there in July, end of July, and then throughout August, and slight blip towards the end of August, and again as we enter back into September, of which we are monitoring. And I think it was mentioned in discussions that we've had where when we're alerted, the response is comprehensive. It isn't just, oh, there's a problem there, the home needs assistance. We go in, we work with health colleagues, we work with public health, and we produce and support those individuals to ensure a good infection control and ensuring the person is safe and well and supported. Next slide, please. support staff unable to work. And we begin here in early July with the numbers significantly, well, not significantly, they are clearly raised, with some degree of variability in all sectors, both residential nursing and domiciliary care. But clearly we are coming down, particularly in both the domiciliary care and nursing care, less so in residential, but the numbers of staff unable to work, as we're, as we've sat here, as we've positioned here the 8th of September, is clearly in a lower position than we began in July. So some degree of, well, a high degree, well, there's a certain degree of positivity there in terms of, we know clearly we need staff in homes, we need to support the teams who've worked tirelessly in independent sector provision and across our homes in terms of staff numbers and capacity, because the pressure that places on the system. Next slide, please. So, final slide, the feedback from the providers. A number of things here, but I will just go through them because they are important in terms of ward, house, residents and staff. I'd like to pass on our sincere thanks for the continued support that the Isle of Wight local authority have given us in the past few weeks. The current situation has been unprecedented, and we feel that you and your team have risen to the challenge through outside the box and achieved the support that we need. So people really thinking innovatively, really thinking solution focused, really thinking people first, person centred. Thank you very much. Stay safe and well. We really appreciate the work you're doing, Highfield Nursing Home. Thank you so much. This is a massive help when we'll relieve some of the pressure we're all feeling, the briars. Extremely grateful that St Helena will be supplied disposable masks. Thank you for your help and support to keep us safe. The Chief Executive is asking to thank you for providing valuable and efficient service. You're all doing a very important work in supporting us in the front line. Thank you, Wright House Group. And finally, thank you for the thoughtful help and support downside house. So what we have here, as my final slide, is a bringing together of, I suppose, for adult social care, how it's worked in partnership, how it's pooled resources allocated to it from government resources, worked in partnership within its strategic groups, its cells, across voluntary sector, with health colleagues, with very fresh and new ways of working, and transforming, delivering that, and continuing to have an appetite for that as we go forward into the unknown. Because this is unprecedented times for all of us, and particularly for those out there on the island. We need to be strong and we need to be solid. And I believe that with our providers and how we've worked with providers and continue to work with providers, that's exactly what we will do. Thank you, John.
Good. Well, Mark, thank you very much for a very comprehensive and, can I say, clear, easy to understand presentation. Now we've got questions outstanding from John Howe, Councillor Howe, and Councillor Garrett. So, if your questions haven't already been answered, John, where are you?
I'm here, Chairman. I'm here.
Okay.
Mark, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
He has solved my question, because I was very concerned that not that the people don't work hard in the care home sector or the nursing home sector as well, is that what we don't want is chasing around the country or even chasing around the world when we get short of gangs or it may be a good idea, I don't know how Mark feels about that, but whether we, over the period of time, had a quick visit to each of the nursing and care homes just to make sure they are retaining enough stock to be able to go forward without having to have panic.
John, if I may, Chair, logistically we manage the stock of PPE equipment across the island. We monitor its delivery and where there are shortages and where we need to provide. We are fully aware where those issues are with our providers. and we will ensure that homes aren't left in a position where they have no relevant stock in order that they continue to provide care on a day-to-day basis. And certainly Laura's team, in terms of the commissioning and partnership side and the equipment and delivery side, in partnership with health, in partnership with other colleagues, ensures that we no one falls short. And I have to say, it's been an amazing job, the way in which we've orchestrated that, how we've just joined it up, responded immediately where a home's saying, I have a problem, and keeping the lines of communication open with providers. As Laura, if you know Laura, that's exactly what she likes to do, ensuring good, clear, clean communication and responding effectively in partnership. So I feel I can give you that assurance that we will do our utmost, John, to ensure that homes get what they need.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much.
Andrew.
Thank you, Chair. I wonder if we can return to this question that Joanna Smith put to the Cabinet Member and the Cabinet Member's response. If I've understood that correctly, there is data available that could be very informative to the Care Home Sector on the Isle of Wight. But I may have misunderstood the Cabinet Member's response to this, but that she felt that it was wrong to analyse that data at this moment in time. I think we need to explore that more.
That's not what I meant. Sorry, Andrew. I probably didn't come across properly to you. So the data is there, and we are using the data. What I didn't want to do is that data is being used all the time to support the care homes. That's where it's important, is to use that data for adult social care to put the support in the right places. What I didn't want to do is publish data on individual care homes in the middle of a pandemic that might put pressure on those care homes. That's for within this local authority to support those care homes with the data. You know what things are like when they're put out into the media, and it's like, well, look, that care home didn't manage it as well as another care home. And I think that's actually not useful at all. So the data is being used. It's being used on a daily basis, but in the appropriate sense. What I don't want to do is do a big report now. And it isn't our data to publish out at this precise, out to the general. As long as it's being used appropriately, it is being used. I dare I say it, sometimes things can become a witch hunt if people think, well, that's not being used appropriately. So we're using it to make sure care homes are supported. And sorry if I didn't make myself clear.
Thank you for that clarification, Claire. Now, Joanna wants to comment on what you've said or what Andrew said. Joanna?
Yeah, it's just a quick point. I don't think anyone suggested for a minute that we would or want any confidential information out in the public domain. And certainly, I know a good number of care homes that have had COVID-positive residents, and they've managed that very well. But I think there's a lot of learning that could be got from that as well. So the care homes that had one or two cases, and they kept maintained it at one or two cases, protected all the other residents and stuff are, there's a huge amount of learning about how they managed to do that. So I'm not suggesting for a minute that we disclose which homes these are, but I think there is some learning about how homes have managed individual cases and how they've managed to overall, not for
Well, you have also kept our forums going, so I know all the forums are there, so that information is shared and used with it. You know, as I said, my daughter works within a care home. I know John Metcalf wants to comment as well. But I know the lessons that are learned, they are shared. And the island spirit, even though these are independent care homes, is absolutely stunning, really, how they've worked together.
Yeah. John? Not Councillor Metcalf. Managing Director Metcalf.
I was just going to make exactly the same point that Councillor Mosden's raised. I think the work that has been done by adult social care and running regular webinars with care home providers, where there has been a sharing of learning and a sharing of information, I think has been really positive. And I think, I know from personal experience, having seen it, that the contact that the adult social care commissioning team have had on a daily basis with care homes, given advice and guidance that where they've taken and distilled the learning from certain areas and put it into other areas, has been really really powerful, sat alongside the help that's gone in from the CCG and the trust in terms of specific one-off pieces of help. So I think all that learning is being shared and has been passed across, and people are talking on a very regular basis to be able to do that. So I think Joanna's point is really valid, but I do think that we haven't lost it, and I think there's an awful lot that's been learned over the last 6 months that will take us into the next 6 months as well.
Right, Andrew, are you happy with those responses?
Certainly, Chair. I thought it was important, and Councillor Mulster has clarified what she said, because I think the wrong message might have gone out there.
Good.
Certainly, I might contact Joanna if she doesn't mind, and we might explore some of that.
Yeah, please do. For anybody that doesn't know, Andrew is also known as Mr. Data. So it's very important that we get this item clear. Thank you very much for that. So I think that now closes this item, and we move on to... Michael, I'm ever so sorry. You made a really common sense proposal, Michael. Would you like to state your proposal so we can vote on
it? Yes, I've put it through to Paul so that hopefully he's got the wording to help him. I wish to make the following proposal. Health Scrutiny Committee wishes to thank the staff in adult social care and all staff in Isle of Wight home care and residential and nursing home providers for their outstanding work through the COVID-19 crisis. In accordance with Health Scrutiny inviting to this meeting, Isle of Wight voluntary and sector representatives to present and discuss with the committee about their experience during COVID, we invite representatives of Isle of Wight home care, residential and nursing home providers to our next meeting. I'm looking for a seconder.
Right, Andrew seconded that, so Megan, can you do the round on that?
Yep, Councillor Cameron.
I support this.
Councillor Garrett.
Support.
Councillor Howe.
John.
Support.
Councillor Lilly.
Support.
And Councillor Nicholson.
Well, that's unanimous on that. Good job. We'll have an informal meeting, I think, first, as we did with other sectors. So, really good. So now we'll move on to item C, which is the NHS.